Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
1890 453 106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cent. Time to have a look at some stories from other parts of the world, the kind of stories that don't necessarily hit the front pages because we're so taken up with other stuff. Jonathan de Burka Butler is our guide as ever. Jonathan, good afternoon.
Sean,
to you. Right, Kazakhstan we're going to first, and this is a kind of silly thing, but you know, there's no sign of it getting less silly.
No, there isn't. We should probably go back to the beginning. So Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan are right beside each other. Kazakhstan being the bigger of the two, with a population of about 18 million and Kyrgyzstan about 7 million. On September the 19th, the Kazakh president, Nursultan Nazarbayev, now I'm not going to go through a whole litany of pronouncing all of these names,
yes,
I'll give you the most important ones. Nursultan Nazarbayev, he met a presidential candidate from Kyrgyzstan in the run-up to the Kyrgyzstan elections. Now, that sounds fairly a non-event, to be honest with you, but the fact was that this particular presidential candidate was a member of the opposition and had not been endorsed by the outgoing Kyrgyz president, okay, a man by the name of Almazbek Atambayev, okay? Now, formerly, these two presidents were fairly pally.
Yes.
Okay, but when Atambayev found that the opposition presidential candidate that he wasn't endorsing had been invited to Kazakhstan, he was a bit upset about that.
Mm.
So 8 days before the election in Kyrgyzstan, Atambayev decided to go on a bit of a public rant on October the 7th. Now, I'm not sure if he had had a few drinks, but anyway, he basically said that Kazakhstan shouldn't be getting involved in the politics of Kyrgyzstan, and that by inviting this opposition candidate, he was endorsing a former president who had been ousted in a military coup in 2010.
Mm.
Effectively, he wasn't very happy. So we're at that point, and I'm amazed I got to that point, to be honest with you, fairly simply. But what happened in response was the Kazakhs got annoyed. Their authorities at the border decided that they would start to enforce checks that they usually didn't check. So trucks that were coming over took longer to be checked through. And as a result, you had miles and miles of trucks being stopped at the border. There was one interview where a man had been there for 3 days. He was bringing raisins from Kyrgyzstan into Kazakhstan, and he'd been sat in traffic for 3 days. So it all got a bit silly and out of control. The Kyrgyzstan authorities, for their part, they were expecting to get a sort of a loan of $100 million from Kazakhstan, but their parliament has now gone into the process of actually rejecting it, sort of saying, no, we don't need your money, we don't want your money. It's all a bit childish.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, the general population is suffering as a result.
Is there something else perhaps going on here that Kazakhstan wants to influence the outcome of the election in Kyrgyzstan?
Well, that's a good question. The election actually happened and the result of it was actually very close. Mm. Compared to most elections in this part of the world,
right.
Okay, it actually kind of works where they have term limits that they actually stick to in Kyrgyzstan. So I think it was fairly close, and I think the Kyrgyzstan authorities were worried that if there was influence from Kazakhstan, that people might change their point of view. As it happens, that the president's candidate or the ex-president's candidate was elected.
Yeah.
So he was happy enough in the end. But it's still at a standstill, and they've even brought this to their own sort of European Union or the equivalent. It's the Eurasian Economic Union. There's five countries in it, and they tried to get involved to sort out the situation, but neither party are taking part in it.
Yeah, and relations between the two countries have
usually
been reasonably
quite good. Yeah, we're usually quite good. The Kazakhs, for their part, are saying, look, this is a kind of a routine thing. You know, we sort of scale up our checking every now and again. And they said to everybody else involved in that particular union, it's worth bearing in mind that in the first 8 months of this year, about $2 billion worth of stuff has come through the country, come through Kyrgyzstan from China.
Mm.
So, you know, we need to keep an eye on these guys anyway.
Right, okay. It's still at the same time, though, if an opposition candidate suddenly gets FaceTime with the president of a neighbouring country, that in itself sends him, and Kazakhstan couldn't have been so dopey as to go, there's a problem.
Indeed, they are, that's a perfect word to use, actually. They are sort of playing the dope here a bit, to be honest with you. I mean, even saying, oh, well, look, forget about the spat. You know, we should look at the fact that there's $2 billion worth of smuggled goods coming in from China here, so we need to keep an eye on these guys. So it's all a bit silly, but that's what's happening, and it's affecting people, thousands, tens of thousands of people every day.
Yeah. Right, Indonesia we're going to next, and of course a headline, explosion at fireworks factory, usually sounds like the start of a joke. This is far from funny, though.
Yeah, very serious, this one. This was two explosions that actually happened in a factory in Indonesia, and as a result, 48 people are now dead, and given that there was only 120 or 125 people working in the factory, that gives you an idea of the extent. Now, when I first looked at this, it was 47 people dead. Since it's gone up to 48, and it would appear that sparks from a welding operation lit raw materials in this fireworks factory, and that's where the whole thing happened. There was two explosions, as I said, one that happened at 10 a.m. in the morning, and then the second one, which happened 3 hours later, which I can only imagine was when people were in looking for survivors, and a second explosion goes off. So it's a horrible story. Now, since yesterday, I think, the owner and the manager have now been detained, and it transpires that they had a permit for packaging fireworks, but not for the production of fireworks. So these guys are in big trouble.
Oh, dear. So yeah. so they shouldn't have been making them there anyway.
No, it would appear that these guys are in big trouble.
Yeah, but even at that, though, they still had a permit to have fireworks on the premises.
That's true, yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So it seems as if the kind of fire safety standards were lax, to put it mildly.
Yeah, and I mean, they do have a bit of a history of this. There's one case I remember from 2015 when I think 17 people were killed in a karaoke bar, I think, on an island there. And there was another one in 2009 where 20 people were killed in Sumatra. So health and safety standards wouldn't be the best.
Yeah, right. Okay, Australia we're going to now. And this story got a bit of play during the week, but it's a kind of an odd one. The Deputy Prime Minister, is it, can no longer be an MP in Australia?
Yes.
Because... They're not Australian?
Yeah, because he's not from New Zealand, but he has New Zealand citizenship. I should say this was actually sent to me by a listener called Kenneth, named Kenneth O'Brien. So
okay.
It's thanks to him for that. He, along with four senators, have been kicked out of their job effectively. So this man's name is Barnaby Joyce. He's the Deputy Prime Minister, as you said. And there's a law that goes back to 116 years, 1st of January 1901 it was brought in. It's a constitutional ban on a subject or citizen of a foreign power. Now, Mr. Joyce's problem is that he actually didn't know that he was a citizen of New Zealand, right? His father was a Kiwi,
mm-hmm.
right? And his father never renounced his Kiwi citizenship.
Right.
But when his father died, under Kiwi law since 1948... citizenship automatically passes on to your family,
okay.
unless you renounce it. So technically speaking, he was breaking the law. This was discovered, and he's been kicked out of his job.
But presumably he thought he was Australian.
He is Australian.
He had an Australian passport.
Yeah.
So does the law specifically say you can't have dual citizenship?
Exactly, and represent people in... it's been interpreted that way.
Yeah.
So the law says that a subject or citizen of a foreign power, that's what it says.
Yeah.
And it has been interpreted as meaning dual citizenship. So for example, Tony Abbott was asked... It is Tony Abbott, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
The former PM was asked, because he was born in Wales or somewhere like that, or England, something like that. And he was asked, he produced it on Twitter, no, I renounced my British citizenship years ago. But others have been caught out in similar circumstances.
And yeah, so the Deputy PM isn't the only person who's been...
No, I mean, the first guy was a Green senator back in July, and he actually came forward and said, listen, somebody brought this to my attention, so I resign. And there's been a few people.
Yeah. Now, given that it's still an odd one.
It's stupid because, I mean, half the people of Australia have heritage.
Yeah.
You know, that goes, their parents are either not from, even now, their parents are not from Australia.
Yeah, but the thing is if this guy was born and raised in Australia, has an Australian birth cert, has an Australian passport. Now, in a foreign jurisdiction, they say, oh, no, he's New Zealand. But sure, New Zealand law doesn't apply in Australia. So Why are they paying any attention to it? So, is there a kind of a political agenda beneath all this to try and erode?
I don't think so. I think from what I've seen of it, because I've been keeping an eye on it since the summer, it seems that it's a journalist copped on to something here and basically gone, you know, and now it's become a bit of a, a bit of a something storm.
Yeah.
But it was interesting what the judges said, right? Just to, I know we're short on time, but the judges in the case, they acknowledged that it was harsh, but they said that the facts must always have been knowable. And then they also pointed to the fact that difficulties of proving or disproving a person's state of mind couldn't be brought into the case. So they're basically saying that if you knew, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I suppose fair enough. So now he's resigned his seat, and does he get the chance to run?
Yes. So because he's resigned his seat, there's going to be a by-election, and he's probably going to win it.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's just basically wasting everybody's time.
And have there been any talk about perhaps renouncing this law or amending it somehow to stop this happening in the future?
That's the latest thing I saw in the last couple of hours, that there's talk of, but they're going to have a referendum, to do it.
Oh, really?
Because it's constitutional.
Okay, all right.
And you know Australians and referendums.
Yes.
You know, and given the fact that they have to vote there, it's a complete pain in the backside.
Oh, what a pain. Right, okay, so we are going over to New Zealand, the citizen-grabbing country to the right or left of Australia. And they've banned foreign buyers from buying houses.
Yeah, this is an interesting one given all the stuff that's going on in Ireland. I thought Prime Minister-elect Jacinda Ardern, who
if
is
you want to know
Labour.
How to pronounce her name, you saw that story, just ring her up, apparently. She'll answer the phone herself.
Great. So she's the new Labour Prime Minister. Mm. And one of the things she's bringing in is she's banning foreign buyers from buying houses. Okay, so just like we have the problem here with housing stock, they have the same problem in New Zealand. Low interest rates, limited housing stock, and they're also using immigration here, which is interesting because they're in a coalition with another party called New Zealand First, who would be anti-immigration.
Right.
So you've got like Labour
that's
and New Zealand First together.
Isn't it?
It's
yeah.
very strange. So anyway, that's the rule she's bringing in. And the figures are interesting. There was a survey done by Knight Frank Real Estate Agents, and they said that in Wellington alone, prices to the end of the year, June 2017, had risen to 18%. Risen by 18%, which is quite something.
It's not too dissimilar to here. Now, is she bringing in that law? Is she trying to prevent foreign corporations or individuals who are mass buying up properties as an investment rather than people who are moving to New Zealand?
Exactly. That's what I think that she's looking at. So it's specifically aimed at foreigners who are non-resident.
Yes.
Okay. So she's very specific about that. And if you dig a little deeper into the story specifically, it seems many commentators are saying that they're targeting Chinese companies or businesses that are coming in and buying up these places and then renting them out.
Okay. Presumably that's a relatively popular move then.
I would say so.
Even with our coalition partners.
Yes, certainly with them.
Approve of that kind of thing. Yeah. Right, we're going to go to the US / India next. And this is the story about the Dalai Lama's second in command. Who is who?
Lama Tenzin, he's known as. Tenzin Donden, he's also known as, apparently. I think he's called the Smiling Monk or something like that. But he's the guy who sets up meetings, particularly in the United States, for the Dalai Lama. So if you want the Dalai Lama to speak at your function, this guy
sets
it up.
He's the guy. He's his agent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there has been a complaint brought against him by a man called Daniel Kranzler, okay, who's a venture capitalist from Seattle, as far as I know. He's in tech. And Kranzler said that between 2005 and 2008, this smiling monk put pressure on him to give him money so that he could get an audience with the Dalai Lama. Mm-hmm. Now, I find this a little bit bizarre in that he felt pressured into making payments, but that doesn't mean he had to pay him, you know?
Right, yeah.
So I find it a bit bizarre. Anyway, he took these complaints directly to the Dalai Lama in a face-to-face discussion, and he wrote two letters to him as well. So as a result, this guy has been actually suspended as a secretary and trustee of one of the Dalai Lama's NGOs. But he's also hired some lawyers himself from New York to sort of defend him. And they said that this is, you know, designed to falsely and unfairly tarnish his reputation. So we'll see what happened. I don't know. I was looking into this, and there was at least one source from a couple of years ago, and it's only one, I want to underline that, which said that this man was involved in some sort of sexual impropriety
Now, this is the guy, the venture capitalist.
No, Lama Tenzin.
Right, okay.
And I'm speculating here, and I want to emphasize that,
yeah.
that this guy might be being hung out to dry a little bit, and he might be an embarrassment to the organization.
Okay, there might be something else at play here, because asking for a donation doesn't sound that sinister necessarily.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, the Dalai Lama has already come out and said that he's expressed deep disappointment and concern.
Right. Okay. All right. There may well be more in that story that is immediately apparent. Right. We're going to go to Uganda next. And opposition MPs are rejecting. What do they mean by similar story? Consultation money. What
consultation money. Yeah. This is a fund of just 6,816 euros, or the equivalent of it. I think it's 29 million shillings. It's brilliant. To go back to their constituencies and consult with their constituents as to whether the age limit for the president should be taken away. So currently it's 75, and you'll find it no surprise that Yoweri Museveni is at the moment 73, and he wouldn't mind another crack at being president.
Right.
So they are being offered this consultation money, which some of them have been given already, I believe, and 8 of them at least have handed it back. Now, these are opposition members, it should be said, who are talking about this. 8 of them have handed it back. Others have said that they're going to hang on to it, and that they're going to give it to their communities who they need to support. One of the quotes is brilliant, if I'm allowed to say it. So one of the MPs said, "I did not receive that money from the hotel, so I will take it for my people. I have been supporting many activities back home using my personal funds, and the expenditure is unbearable. So I just put that in my pocket and go home."
Very subtle, very classy.
Consultation money.
Right. Honolulu is the first US city to find phone zombies. These are not actual zombies, though.
Not actual ones, no. These are phone zombies. So crossing the road while using a mobile device will now be illegal in Honolulu, and you'll be fined between $15 and $35. But it'll go up to even $99 for repeat offenders. Now, it could be because I'm getting older, but I think this is brilliant.
Yeah, no, it's about time, because it is a bit, I mean, and there are occasionally reporters kind of sort of funny stories, but people who like walk off bridges because they're looking at their phones, or walk off the edges of cliffs because they're not looking at their phones. It's very dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a result, people are getting knocked down. The mayor, Kirk Caldwell, has actually said that Honolulu had the unfortunate distinction of being a major city with more pedestrians being hit on crosswalks. So he has a point there, and it's... it's a good story. It'll happen in other cities, I'm sure.
Right, what should we look out for in the next week or so?
Okay, so Putin is continuing his world tour, and he's off to Iran this time, and no doubt what they'll be talking about there. Things such as Syria, of course. Trump is going to Japan, and that is the start of his tour of Asia. I wonder, is he going to stop off in North Korea?
We played some of the entertainment they're providing for him tomorrow. It is truly jaw-dropping.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so that'll be interesting anyway. And then on November the 5th, it's World Tsunami Awareness Day. Unfortunately, the political and news diaries were a little bit thin last week. So
I would imagine it's hard to not notice the tsunami when you see them. Jonathan, thanks a million for coming into us. Jonathan DeBurka Butler there. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas